Welcome to the Wildlife Health Talks. This is the 31st episode introducing WDA members and their amazing work all over the world. Let me take you to one of my favorite cities in the world, Sydney, Australia. We are at the 2024 Wildlife Health and Pathology Short Course at Taronga Zoo. It feels very much like a family reunion of the Australian wildlife health community and of course provides plenty of opportunity to meet and interview amazing people working in wildlife health. This episode's guest is Dr. Tanya Adeyori. Tanya is the very first female vet in Papua New Guinea and only one of three national vets at the National Agriculture and Quarantine Inspection Authority, or in short, NACIA. One of her first challenges in the new position was managing the African swine fever outbreak. In a country where pigs are of such cultural and economic importance, that's a true challenge. Welcome to the show, Tanya.
Thank you so much, Kat. It's a pleasure to be here with you today to share a little bit about myself and my story. Thank you.
I'm very excited to have you here. And if there's a bit of like bird noise in the background or anything else, we're sitting outside at Taronga Zoo, so there might be some natural noise around us. Tanya, when did you join the WDA?
So I joined the WDA after I graduated from vet school, which was in 2020. So it's been almost about 3 and something years since then.
Nice. But you haven't been to a WDA conference yet, but you will be very soon in December this year, which is taking place in Canberra because you're part of the organizing committee of the online conference. So are you excited?
Yeah, I'm very excited. There's a lot of different people from a lot of countries part of the team. So I'm excited to learn a lot from them as well. Yeah.
And we are very lucky to have you. Let's chat a bit about your career path, which I think is super interesting and fascinating. So you wanted to become a vet since you were a teenager, but back then you didn't know any vets or you had never been to a vet clinic. How did you get the idea and the inspiration to wanting to become a vet?
Yeah, so funny you asked that question. In Christmas last year, I actually had a talk with one of my aunties, my mom's sister. And she actually told me that there was a day she was picking me up from daycare when I was 4 years old. And I was playing with this ant. And then I suddenly just told her that, you know what, I'm going to be a veterinarian one day. I'm going to be an animal doctor. And I think I don't know what, inspired this four-year-old. But ever since then and ever since I can remember, that was something that I wanted to do. And I think a part of it also had to do with my parents' careers. My mom was a midwife working in the human health space, and my dad worked in agriculture, but with cocoa and coconut. And they were also very supportive of my dreams as well. But yeah, I hadn't seen a vet or been to a vet clinic before I started my first degree at university. So
there are no vet schools in PNG, so you had a very long way and worked much harder than most to finally make your dreams come true. Can you give us a short summary of how you managed to become the very first vet in PNG?
Yeah, so after vet school, I calculated that it took me almost 13 years to get to, graduate as a veterinarian. Because when I was in high school, I was advised that there were two options that I could take, which was to either study human medicine and then later apply for a scholarship to do vet studies, because the only way was to study overseas. And you have to be on scholarship because it's quite expensive to get to vet school, and you have to do really well because it's, academically competitive. So I ended up going the biology direction and majored in animal biology in my first degree, which was in PNG, in Port Moresby. And then after that, worked as a wildlife biologist for a few years, before I applied into vet school at CSU and got accepted. But that was only half of the journey because I had to come back to my own country in PNG and then apply for the scholarship. So I was pretty lucky that both of those things happened, quite well for me. So
yeah, that's awesome. And as you said, you worked hard for it. So it wasn't just coincidence. I'm very sure of that. Then finally you got the scholarship and went to the small rural town of Wagga Wagga in Australia, which not many people have heard of, especially outside of Australia. But it has a very good vet school from Charles Sturt University. And you had to leave behind your family and your little son back then. Now you have two kids, but back then your little son. So what was that like for you to go to a different country with the study there in a different language?
Yeah, it was very challenging. My son was about 9 months old when I left to start vet school. And, you know, at first I was really excited about this was something that I wanted to do for such a long time. But then after a while, when I got into studies and I started missing my son and getting anxious and everything, and I knew that I had to bring my son over in order to be able to complete the course. And not only that, you know, being in a small country town, there aren't a lot of Pacific Islanders or people that you could culturally relate to, which was challenging, but I had such good friends in vet school, which is one of the things that I was very blessed at the time to have such amazing people be part of my cohort, which allowed me to enjoy and successfully complete the vet course.
That's so nice to hear. I'm really glad you had such a good experience after all this hard work to get there. In your role as National Veterinarian for the National Agriculture and Quarantine Inspection Authority, I like saying this, you oversee the islands off the coast of the mainland of PNG. How many islands are there?
So there are 5 main islands for the New Guinea island region, which is the region that I cover. In Papua New Guinea, there are 4 regions. But because of the limited number of vets, we only have 4 veterinarians that work in the organization. One is our chief veterinary officer, and the other 3 regional veterinary officers, which I am one of. I look after the New Guinea Island regions. And like I said, that our region has about 5 main islands, but a lot of smaller chained islands, but very beautiful. Must visit.
It sounds amazing. Also sounds like a lot of traveling involved.
Oh yes, definitely a lot of traveling.
So pretty soon after you started in your new position, the country had an outbreak of African swine fever. And that sounds super stressful just talking about it. How is the disease spread in PNG usually?
Yeah, so the outbreak actually happened a few months before I started with Nakia. And before the outbreak happened, they thought that the disease would spread through borders, so the nearest border province. But it happened right at the center of the heart of PNG, which is in the highlands, and where there's a high density of pigs, and where pigs are so culturally and economically important. And because it happened there, it was a bit difficult to control it because of how important it was as a part of people's day-to-day livelihoods and day-to-day practices. Pigs are used in almost every traditional ceremony or almost every occasion. Where there's a party, where there's what we say compensation, or where there's a bride price, sort of like marriage, or where there's death in the family, pigs are always there. It's much more valuable than actual money itself.
So I heard you are read about a quote you said about what pigs are compared to. Do you wanna tell
yeah,
us?
Yeah, we say that pigs are lawyers because they solve all of our problems, and that's what it actually is on the ground. Because if you've got a conflict situation, especially up in the highlands, money just doesn't resolve it. But if there's pigs involved, it gets resolved.
That's
another
awesome
say. If pigs are involved, it gets resolved.
I love that. Makes things so much easier. Yeah. We should do that here as well. Love it. How did you deal with the challenge of the African swine fever outbreak as a new vet? What were the actions that needed to be taken?
I think I learned, you know, by doing and by seeing. Although there were not a lot of vets and not a lot of animal health officers, the people that I worked with had a wealth of knowledge and wealth of experience working with people on the ground. Because, you know, when we're dealing with animals, we're actually dealing with people, because behind an animal are the people who own them. So I actually learned a lot from my colleagues and also learned by doing, which is not fun sometimes. And sometimes you're placed in like really difficult situations where you have to make difficult decisions with, in terms of biosecurity and also people's livelihood. And yeah, so it was quite challenging, but I think I learned a lot from the experience, and I learned a lot more about people, because you don't really learn that in vet school. In vet school, it's all about the animal, but actually, when you start in practice, it's actually quite the opposite. So
that makes a lot of sense, especially then you didn't only have to deal with maybe sometimes problematic pet owners, but also with all the farmers and like basically educating them about biosecurity, right? Where it might not have been something they followed before.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And that's still a big part of your work?
Yes, I think one of the goals of what we wanted to do during the response was to talk to people about farm biosecurity and get people to change their practices and to think about prevention more than letting a disease occur and then trying to solve with treatment. So yeah, that's part of our key messaging for all our risk communication materials at the moment, not just for African swine fever, but all the other important notifiable and exotic diseases that are around in the region.
That sounds super challenging. How did you and your colleagues manage it, or how are you approaching this challenge?
Yeah, because I'm not sure if you know, but in Papua New Guinea we have over 800 plus languages, and it's such a diverse...
I didn't actually know that it's that many. Wow.
And our culture is also as diverse, and a lot of it is shaped by the environment that we're in. So you know, me going to another province, having to communicate, especially scientific and very technical things, we have to involve other stakeholders and important people on the ground who are from there, who've worked with the people and who can speak the languages. So that, you know, involving them in the work that we do, for example, provincial livestock offices, which we call them back in PNG, I guess close that communication gap. And when we're talking to farmers about biosecurity, we try to use analogies and try to make sure that farmers see the value of implementing on-farm biosecurity. And it has worked so far, and we've seen a lot of improvement, but that behavioral change takes a lot of time, and we understand that, but it's an ongoing activity as part of the emergency preparedness and response.
It definitely sounds like it's never getting boring in your job. Let's chat a bit about wildlife. Wildlife in PNG is obviously huge. I've never been, unfortunately, but I feel like most people know that they're not just amazing birds of paradise, but so many different species of marsupials and other really cool animals. So yeah, so there's incredible diversity of species, and many are even unique to PNG. But the local population is often also in close contact with wildlife through like having wild animals as part of the diet, or trading them, or keeping them as pets. So tell us a bit about the situation with the wildlife, like what's currently been going on in terms of wildlife health surveillance.
So yeah, you're right. PNG is so biologically diverse. I mean, PNG contributes only 1% to the total global landmass, but contains 6-7% of the world's biodiversity.
Wow, so that's huge.
Yeah, it's amazing. But in terms of wildlife health surveillance, a lot of work with wildlife is more conservation and biological research. There hasn't been a lot done in terms of wildlife health and disease. I think there's only been a few studies where people from outside have come in to study as part of their research projects and have added valuable information to our data on wildlife. But within Nakia, this is something that we haven't done. And with important diseases like avian influenza, rabies, you know, and all these other important diseases that can transfer from wildlife to humans and domestic animals, we're realizing that it's very important to have that whole One Health approach and include wildlife as part of our surveillance. And I'm very lucky to be a part of this course here and to learn so much from everybody during this course, and seeing how I can take what I learned and how I can be able to implement and, you know, impact our work in PNG in a positive way and include wildlife surveillance as part of that activity.
Has the African swine fever reached the wild population of pigs?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. Up in the highlands, we don't have, I don't know whether it's because of the geography or We don't have any wild or feral pigs up in the Highlands, which has been such great luck for us.
So it was kind of quarantined in a way, naturally.
Yes.
Okay.
And we set up checkpoints in order for the disease not to move down to the coast, which is where all the feral and wild populations are. So what we've experienced with the disease is that after the initial wave of infections came through, it's sort of burnt out, and now we're at a stage where we have to go back and find out whether it's still present in the region or not. And you know, we've managed to contain the disease up in the Highlands region, which is an incredible work done by everyone to make sure that happened, and great leadership from our chief veterinary officer as well. So
how did the disease get there in the first place?
Yeah, so based on traceback and delimiting surveys, the theory is that, not proven, but the theory is that so there was illegally imported pork products that came into the country, and at that time up in the center where the first case of African swine fever occurred, there was a construction company, and we think that the imported pork product got somehow fed to the pigs as leftovers, and then from there it spread. And when I spoke to you about how important pigs were and that they were used in every occasion and every event, so you can imagine how quickly that spread, because pigs were used every day, everywhere in the Highlands region.
You don't want to lock them away because they're part of everyday life, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that does make it incredibly challenging, but even more amazing that you guys managed to contain it.
Yeah.
What is the legal situation in PNG regarding wildlife? For example, pet trade, keeping wildlife as pet, is that well controlled?
Yeah, that's a really good question. In PNG, our laws or our acts are outdated. So our Animal Act and Disease Control Act is as far as 1953 and hasn't been amended since then. But now we are developing a new biosecurity policy that's going to be passed soon. And that covers things like animal welfare and, you know, covers, I guess, our ability to enforce some of these things when an animal welfare is not being practiced in a good way. And I know that with the trade of wildlife, that is covered under a different act, which is with the Conservation Environment Protection Authority, which is more to do with wildlife and conservation type work. But we're hoping that as these laws get amended, it can cover these wildlife trade and selling of wildlife as well.
So that means at this point, it is not illegal to keep a wild animal as a pet, even if it's endangered or...
Exactly. And I can't, I as a regional veterinary officer can't be able to do anything about it because I don't have laws that support me to do that. Yeah.
So all you can do is using your people skills and try to educate
and
tell people why this might not be a good idea.
And awareness. Yeah. And what the RSPCA clinic, which is the only clinic that we have in Port Moresby, in the whole country, is trying to do is, you know, also educate people who are not sellers but who are buyers, because if there's a market, then there'll always be people wanting to sell. So
yeah, that's a huge challenge. My last question to you, I know you have a big vision and you have a lot of ideas and so much energy, which I find really inspiring. So what is your vision for One Health in PNG, what you would like you and your colleagues to achieve in the near future?
Yeah, I think at this stage, what I would like with regards to One Health is, you know, for all the organizations to be collaborating together. I think that's where we want to go. And I know in the One Health space, it's a bit difficult to get everybody seated at the table and discussing and communicating together. And I think that's my vision.
Lucky you're an expert in communication by now.
Yeah, about pigs.
The topic doesn't matter. Yeah. You bring people together.
Yeah. But yeah, I would like to see that happening a lot more. And I think as that happens, a lot of important discussions around One Health will then be brought onto the table. And we just can see some changes within the country.
That's awesome. And yeah, I have to say, it sounds like you said this to me earlier. It's like a very exciting time because things are changing and you are at the front line of that change. But there's also so much to do, right?
Yes.
So yeah, you are definitely a busy woman.
Both exciting and overwhelming at the same time. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for being my guest on the show, Tanya. It was so cool to learn about your story.
Thank you so much, Kat.
Thanks for listening to the Wildlife Health Talks. We will be back with a new story in 2 weeks. Bye for now.